It is exactly 7:45 on a Saturday, which means it's time for another Wine Chat with our friend from Haskell's, Ted Farrell. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I hope you are, too, and all the good folks at Haskell's. Here we are, the 7th of June. A few showers here and there, but I think it looks pretty good out there.
I think you are correct. It's, I don't think there's a fourth spring going to show up, or definitely a third winter. So I guess put on our Bermuda shorts and go outside and enjoy this lovely stuff that we have now.
I hope you're right. And what's our topic for today, Ted?
Well, and it's terrific you said that, because what we'll talk about a little bit is barbecue. And barbecue is intertwined into the American tradition like no one's business. Granted, cooking things over an open fire is not indigenous, obviously, to the United States. They've been doing it since we were running around living in caves all so long ago. But it's kind of an interesting thing when the Spanish conquistadors came over and they're down in the Caribbean, they noticed the indigenous folks grilling things or cooking things over fire, but it was over a wood kind of mesh grate that they made, and it really imparted certain flavors. It was probably the wood that they used, and the Spanish sort of translated what the natives called, and it became barbacoa. And that was just a thing that became synonymous with cooking over, an open pit. The same thing. Now, there is some, academics who would argue the French created the word because it is barbe et tu, that they say, which translates from beard to tail, because when you cook that style, you usually cook the whole animal on top of that grill and kind of roast it away. But, that's just, room for discussion. There's no right or wrong answer who did that. But it was that kind of open pit cooking that people really liked and was really embraced. And believe it or not, even through the colonial period, especially, leave the politicians to get involved. Politicians would have huge barbecues. They would dig a huge pit, even almost a block long, and roast all these different animals, usually pig, some cow, etc., to roast that, obviously, to draw people in. Draw those voters in so he could, that particular politician can get his word out and hopefully get their votes. And now, as time went on, barbecue in the United States definitely evolved. It definitely changed. And more importantly, it really developed its regionality, where there's so many varietals of barbecue out there that you can look at. Down in the Carolinas, it's mostly mustard and or vinegar based. And usually it's more the meat they're generally roasting is a hog. And now down there, they're known for their whole hog barbecue, where you roast a whole hog for a while. You keep on slapping and slathering it with all that kind of mustard vinegar. And it's, long drawn out process. And then you take it out and then you chop that hog up and you go for it. The famous barbecue that everybody equates to is obviously the Kansas City barbecue, where there's those great spare ribs and pork ribs that are slathered with a tomato-based sauce. So it's entirely different from their friends down in South Carolina. But it's, based more on ribs and things like that. Then obviously down in Texas, it's all about beef. Beef. Whether they do the brisket or whether they do their beef ribs, it looks like Fred Flintstone ordered them out. They're so big and huge. It's just that style in which they make it. And so, the real purist will say, there's barbecuing and then there's grilling. Now, I guess grilling is just throwing steaks on the grill, and barbecue is that slow process where you get a low heat, maybe about 180 degrees. You put your meat on there and you let it slow cook. And the interesting thing about that, more importantly, if you really get into the thick of it, is the meats that most people were using way back then were bad, or kind of not the best cuts of meat. The brisket, if you look at it and if you cook it certain ways, is tough as saddle leather. Just brutal. But when you slow cook it like that for a long period of time, all of a sudden the juices develop and the different connective tissues break down, and it's just something special. Even if you look at a spare rib or the ribs, most of the people who had a lot of money would want loins. They would want a better cut of meat. Ribs are almost discarded. So the people, it's kind of from something, something from absolutely nothing. They discard the ribs. That's all that some people could afford. You slow cooked it, and all of a sudden, magic began. And that really, if you look at it historically, how some of the great cooking experiences happen. I mean, you know, it's a way off the track, but you have France, right? The coq au vin. The coq au vin is rooster in wine. And the rooster was, you know, the old tough bird that passed away after a while. They get a new one, but you had this old bird. What they do, they would eat it, but it, you know, very lean, very ligament, you know, not the best meat. And so you'd have to stew it in wine for a long period of time to break down that meat, make it edible. And that's kind of what barbecue is all about, that slow cooking, you know, to break down those obscure cuts of meat that just turn them into tender, delicious. And again, since we have so many different varieties and methods of grilling and or barbecuing, that's why we put together, for all the listeners out there, a wonderful 6 for $60 barbecue pack. And so what we did with this is we included several different wines from around the world to kind of hang in there, and depending on what style of barbecue, or if you're just grilling, or if you just want to get a nice little package for dad, you can go at it, and, you know, here you go. And it's just a great expression of wine to go with all the different things that you can pull off your smoker, off your grill, or whatever. We're going to start out with a Rosé d'Anjou. This is a little rosé wine from the Loire Valley. It's made by some old friends at Le Chateau. Now, Le Chateau is a relatively new outfit. They've developed they rebranded themselves about 12 years ago, but it's done with the Savignon family. Now, the Savignon family and Haskell's have been doing business for over 40 years. So once they transitioned, we lost a few of the labels, but then they created new labels. So quite frankly, it's the same wine we've been dealing with for the last 50 years, but it's just new branding, new labeling. But you don't have to worry about that. What you need to know is that Rosé d'Anjou in there is just a wonderful, wonderful rosé wine, and a great way to start out your grilling and your barbecue party when you're having people come over. The nice thing about that is dry from the Cabernet Franc, grape varietal, so it's a little bit rounder. It's a voluptuous rosé. And again, with that one, you can put a nice heavy chill on it and truly, truly enjoy it. And, you know, you get people excited, you get in the house or get out in the patio and you're smelling the smoke and all that. You have a little glass of that and you know things are ready to get going. You could also serve that with your salads. You know, a lot of people do like a watermelon salad or things like that. Just terrific with as well. Next, we included Le Forchetier Chardonnay. Now, this is a great little Chardonnay because, you know, we are warming up and people are like, well, it's, you know, not really Chardonnay season. It seems, you know, a little too warm for that. Well, not this one. This one is so lightly oaked. You maybe even think it could even be a Chablis, but it's so lightly oaked, and it's just a wonderful expression of Chardonnay where you have a little bit of that up front, a little bit of the vanilla notes, a little bit of, you know, that toastiness, but it's so light and refreshing. You can put a slight chill on this, not a heavy chill. There's an old entertaining tip. If your Chardonnay is not very good and if you over-chill it, even the greatest palates won't know, because over-chilling Chardonnay will lock up the flavors and, you know, you can't taste as much. You can still enjoy it, but you don't get a lot of the flavorations, and that's just the nature of the Chardonnay grape as well. When it gets over-chilled, it kind of locks up the flavor. But in this one, a nice light chill in the fridge for 25 minutes or so. Just great. And again, this one, because you can do so many different meats, this would even hang in to, like, if you're just grilling chickens. I mean, it's just perfect fat. Or, you know, also if you're just maybe a little bit of salmon on the grill, just fantastic. And speaking of salmon on the grill, I'd be remiss to not mention the Jacques Bourguignon Pinot Noir. Now, Jacques Bourguignon was an old négociant that worked his way all throughout France buying things. This Pinot Noir is it's technically a vin de pays, and that means a wine of the country. So it is, it's a little bit of a blend, but that's why it's so affordable. It comes from different regions, so they can't hang the region of whether it's Burgundy or Languedoc or Bordeaux or Loire. It kind of is a blend Pinot Noir blend of wines from all throughout France. So by law, they can only call it vin de pays, but nonetheless, a truly rich Pinot Noir. And again, this one with its flavorations would just hit perfect stride with salmon off the grill, or again, a lighter meat like chicken. I mean, just a match made in heaven to truly enjoy it. And it's a great expression of Pinot Noir, and Pinot Noirs can get pretty crazy as far as pricing, but this one, we can sneak that into the box and people enjoy it. And it's a great intro into Pinot Noir for our listeners because it's such a nice, approachable, easy wine. Next, we have from Spain. It's called El Jamón Granacha. And what better critter to have on your label than a big ham? They have a lovely little pig on the character of the pig on the label, but it's El Jamón, which translates as ham. Or the pig on there. And this one being Granacha, it's a little bit more robust. It's a little bit bigger flavor, a little bit more earthy flavor. This one definitely would hang and really match made in heaven with that kind of classic barbecue as we see when you do those spare ribs, that Kansas City style based on ketchup with a little bit of spice. That is just, you know, hits the spot. Right on. And, you know, Granacha is such a widely planted grape varietal all throughout Spain, whether it's, you know, in and around the northern part by Rioja all the way down south. But it's a great little fun wine. You know, the pig on the label makes it a little bit fun. And, you know, obviously that's what you're putting on the grill. So you might as well put some in the down the throat as well. But it's the El Jamón Granacha. Great little fun wines. Next, we have Cathedral Creek Cabernet. And yes, from the good old UFA, a great Cabernet. Now, it's bottled up in Napa Valley, but they source some of the grapes from up and over the Mayacamas Mountains in Sonoma. So, again, it's just a California Cabernet. But the Cathedral Creek is what people are looking for in that type of Cabernet as far as that just a little bit bolder, a little bit bigger. I mean, if you're doing some of that Texas beef style, this is your critter to go with it because it just has the fortitude to stack up to that roasted brisket that you did for, you know, nowadays they tell you to roast those, do those briskets for almost 9 hours on your smoker. You know, you can put a lot of time into it, so you might as well put some time into, or a great wine into all that time that you had with that. And it would also stack up if you did those beef ribs as well. So if you're kind of going in the Texas style, we have a wine for you, this great Cathedral Creek Cabernet out of California. You know, it's just very affordable, very approachable, tad bit of vanilla to it, so very nice. Now, lastly, we have a Cote de Rhone from the Rhone Valley, the Rastillien Cote de Rhone. Great, fun wine. Now, this is a blend of Grenache, Mourvèdre, Syrah, and this is the kind of the cleanup hitter, so to speak, because this one can go with pretty near anything that you throw on the grill. Whether it is shrimp, whether it is chicken, whether it is, you know, beef, whatever. You know, Cote de Rhone is so universal. I keep several bottles of Cote de Rhone around my house just because, you know, if you don't know what you're going to do, you just grab into it and enjoy it.
Oh, man, what a great collection. I'm going to try to drop some hints for Father's Day. And for folks that are interested, they can find this at any Haskell's. Tell us where.
You are correct, Eddie. We have a 6 for $60 that will take care of your barbecue needs or, again, that Father's Day gift need for sure. There's Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with free parking on the weekends. There's Haskell's in Minnetonka across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. We have a Haskell's right in Highland Village in St. Paul, Haskell's down in Lowman's Plaza in Bloomington. We also have a Haskell's right out in the lake at Excelsior. They can even run an order out to your boat if you care to. If you're out boating today, then you can stop by a Haskell's at White Bear Lake if you're going to go out the lake out east. Stop by the if you're going to the river, you can go by our Stillwater location. If you're headed down south, stop by our Haskell's in Faribault right off of 35 or headed up north. Swing by the Plymouth store right off of 494 or stop by the Supercellar at Maple Grove. It's a sight to be seen. And if not, you can always stop by Haskell's.com 24/7. You can place that order for this 6 for $60. We can even deliver it to you.
Oh, absolutely. What a great idea. What a great collection. Ted, thank you so much. Let's do this again next week.
I'm looking forward to that, and let's trade some grilling tips.
God, well, I'll make some notes. We'll do that. Thanks, Ted. Ted Farrell from Haskell's. Yeah, he'll be back next week here on CCO.